This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. I was traveling internationally last year. I was in Mallorca. I didn't know the island well. I said, let me head to the north, head towards the water. Let me go on Hotels.com and see what they have available. Something preferably on the beach, maybe even a gym. Not only did I get those things, there was a kids session with exercise, gymnastics in the water, pony rides, a train. It had everything, and I didn't even want any of those things. But at least I knew they were there, just in case I changed my mind. And now finding the perfect hotel has never been easier, thanks to the Hotels.com app. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly, right, all-inclusive, or a relaxing spa weekend, you can find exactly what you need and compare hotel prices, ratings, and amenities side by side. So start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app.
This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Trello help power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. Atlassian.com. Atlassian. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hello and welcome to the Rest is Football question and answer episode with me, Gary Lineker, Micah Richards and Alan Shearer. Lots of cracking questions this week. Thanks very much for sending them in. Let's start straight away. Jeremy Tavern. We have Champions League football Tuesday and Wednesday and the Masters starting on Thursday. Is this the best sporting week of the year? We're recording this on the Tuesday morning prior to the Champions League games.
Yes, yes, yes. What a week. What a week of sport.
Do you know what Masters is, Micah?
Is that a school teacher?
If it is, you'll be in trouble soon. It is one of the great sporting weeks of the year, though, isn't it? Your quarterfinals of the Champions League with a couple of cracking games, and then Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, stuck by the television set every evening for the Masters.
Can you remember years ago when I was sat there and you said to me, I can't believe you're working on Masters Sunday again. Yeah. I've made the same mistake again. I'm working match of the day on Sunday. Can you believe it?
Have you? So you've got to plan these things and put them in your diary, Alan.
Oh my God, I couldn't believe it. I just realised a couple of weeks ago.
Can you tell me what the obsession is with golf? For those who love it, no disrespect, but could you explain, please, why you love it so much?
You can go first, Alan.
Trying to get a little white ball in a hole, Micah, that's it. That's all. And as least shots as possible. That's it. That's it, isn't it, Kaz?
Well, it is, but I don't know. Let me try. First and foremost, it's a good social game. So you can spend hours with a few mates or people you don't like, if you wish. And you go round, and it's a beautiful walk most of the time if it's a sunny day. It's competitive. It's unbelievably difficult. It's the most frustrating thing on the planet. There's no question about that. I think all golfers will agree with that. But when you have a good day, when you play well, it's amazing. And there's I don't think there's anything quite like it. On a beautiful sunny day, a 4-5 hour walk, following a golf ball around, playing well, is just joyous.
I heard Justin Rose on TV this morning, and I think it was John Watson from the BBC was interviewing him. He said, what's the big deal with Augusta? And he said, it's like, because you're walking around this immaculate, this place, he said, it's like the Chelsea Flower Show and walking around on immaculate grass where everyone is so respectful. And it is, isn't it? I mean, the colour, everything else about Augusta is just incredible.
It's beautiful. Anyway, we should move on because this is not the Rest is Golf. Not yet. It might not be yet. By the end of the week. Here's one from David Johnston, who says, we see very few chipped goals these days. Not the one or like little dinks over the goalkeepers, but goals like Eric Cantona versus Sunderland, Davor Šuker versus Schmeichel. Any thoughts on why? I've got a couple of thoughts.
Go on.
One, I think a lot of goalkeepers stay a little bit deeper towards their line now. And the other thing is goalkeepers are massive now. Mm-hmm. Much bigger than they were certainly when I played. And a chip was a genuine, you used to, edge of the box. If the keeper was on the 6 yard box, you'd fancy chipping over him. But not so much now. They're all about 6'5", yeah. 6'7", aren't they?
This wasn't quite a chip, but you've seen one from about 50 yards at the weekend, Bruno Fernandes. I know it wasn't a chip, but yeah, I get that. I understand that, Gaz. Yeah. And yeah, I've never really thought of that, to be honest.
Is it that keepers are maybe a little bit more agile? I don't want to be disrespectful to the older the keepers. I don't know. It's just a question. But the keepers I used to see back in the days were massive, couldn't really move. And now the positioning of the goalkeepers is just different, I would say, maybe.
I think that the goalkeeping trade has become more... I mean, there's training and everything's changed, hasn't it, I suppose? I mean, the game evolves. In all positions, it evolves and people get bigger, stronger, quicker, better technique, better thing. Everything is better because the pitches are better and all that kind of stuff as well. And maybe that's another thing. You don't play in a quagmire anymore, so you can imagine trying to jump out of thick mud. Get your feet off the ground, you do quite well. But I don't know if there's any science behind it other than... probably size, I would say. I mean, Peter Shilton's about 6 foot and he was the best English goalkeeper that I saw him when I was growing up and actually played with him as well. Whereas nowadays, I think Kasper Schmeichel was only just over 6 foot as well. But so I don't know what it is, but I think size mainly, because most of them are enormous. So it's bloody difficult to chip.
Yeah, I don't know though. When you go back in my day, I mean, you're looking at what? I don't know. Schmeichel is, I mean, he's a man mountain, Peter Schmeichel, isn't he?
I don't think he's... I wouldn't say he's above 6'1", 6'2", Peter, would you? Maybe he is.
He's a bit bigger than that, isn't he?
Yeah, maybe. Dan Francis. As a Brit living in the US, I've noticed a real increase in the popularity of real football over here. Partly, I think, due to shows like Wrexham and Ted Lasso. Partly due to the excellent Premier League coverage. Do you ever see a time when the US men's team will be genuine international contenders, or do you think the other sports here will always take the best athletes? Well, Alan, you've just been there.
Yeah, I mean, the interest over there is huge, and I've watched it sort of grow over the last 10 years or so. And the first time we sort of went there for the Premier League to what it is now, the interest in it is incredible. I suppose, as we said at the weekend, didn't we? I suppose Messi's also got played a part in that, in a role in that, because the interest in him and in Miami and everything else is gone off the charts, and rightly so, because the number of followers that he's got then will follow him into the US. So it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Whether it'll ever be number one sport over there, I'm not quite so sure, but the interest is massive.
I think if they took it proper seriously in terms of number one sport, like Alex said, I think they'd have a massive, massive chance. America is so diverse as well, so you're not just getting Americans. You have people over there from all sorts of backgrounds. If you look at athletics, like fitness-wise, strength-wise, they can compete. If they just had the coaching, then definitely, yeah, I would say they could.
Yeah, I think also if they could produce their own superstar.
Yeah.
That would make a big difference. And there is one coming through that they think. I mean, I'm always a bit wary about these with youngsters, but apparently Manchester City are leading the race to sign a wonder kid called Cavan Sullivan. Mm-hmm. He's only 14. He's already got the nickname Captain America. So at the moment, he's said to be leaning towards Manchester City rather than Real Madrid, Bayern Munich and PSG. So maybe there's a superstar coming.
Wait till he hears Newcastle are interested in him.
Yeah, he'll run a mile. He'll go, where's that?
Newcastle?
Oh, we got one of these, boys. Buy, bench or sell.
Oh!
This is pretty brutal, this one too. Saka, Foden, Palmer. I don't think they mean Arnold Palmer, even on Masters Week.
Oh my God.
Who wants to go first?
Oh my gosh. we're going to get chastised for this.
Not really, because we can state that they're all wonderfully talented, gifted young players that we'd all like all three on their side.
Yeah, don't take this seriously, anyone, okay? It's just a...
All right, okay. I'll go first. Go I'll on. Set on, the big standard. Meeks. Buy Foden, bench Saka,
yeah.
Sell Palmer.
Yeah.
That's what I'm going
to
go with.
I'll go with that as well, I think. And it makes me feel slightly queasy to put Saka on the bench and sell Palmer, because who would want to sell a player that good? Yeah, only exactly. Manchester City would do something that stupid. What do you think, Alan?
Yeah, same. Got to, yeah. Yeah.
Here's one for you. And I'm slightly reticent about asking this question because I'm slightly...
Who's it to?
To Big Meeks.
Big Meeks. Oh!
A little bit nervous about the answer. How did the nickname Big Meeks come about?
Be careful, Michael. There might be kids listening here.
Well, there's a PG version and the PG version. Is, I think it's self-explanatory, is it not?
What, you're big-headed?
Yeah. I've got big guns in my chest. Yeah. I had a six-pack for about 10 years. So, yes, that's why they call me Big. I think it was Joe Hart who said it. Big Meeks from when we was young. And it just stuck, to be fair. And then everyone just started using it. And no word of a lie, people always ask me that. Why do you call yourself Big Meeks? I said, I don't call myself Big Meeks. People call me Big
You've
Meeks.
You've called yourself Big Meeks loads of times on this podcast.
I keep hearing you say Big Meeks all the time.
but Big Meeks is like a caricature. Is that the right word?
Yeah, that could be the right
Of oneself, isn't it?
I've like, heard you Big, call being called worse.
Big Meeks is not a real person, is it? Big Meeks is
not.
Like a version of one of my personalities that comes out when I'm on TV.
Well, you make sure it doesn't come out on TV, okay? Because no one wants to see that.
It is. And sometimes it really comes out.
Too much information. I've got another question for you. You're on fire here. Come on. From Eldon. Question for Big Meeks. What are your day-to-day meals? To have so much energy and laughter and joy, night and day is impressive. Whatever you're having, I need that in my life. Oh, it's another dangerous question. God. Love the pod, guys. You're always a source of joy. Thank you.
Chicken. But chicken. You know what? Chicken. I had the best news, probably. You know, you have commercials, you get to work for BBC and Sky and CBS and League of Their Own. But the best possible news I could have ever received about 2 years ago. What did I say to you a couple of weeks ago? I'm a chicken connoisseur and I've only gone and agreed a Nando's black card. Yes! And for those who don't know what a Nando's black card is, it means you get free Nando's whenever you want.
My goodness. You're going to be enormous, Meeks.
What do you mean he's going to be?
So in answer to the question...
They'll regret that. They'll lose all their profits.
I'm going to eat about house and home.
Yeah. Other chickens are available.
If you want to sponsor us, of course.
What is it? A red card?
It's a black card.
A black card. And what? So where did you get that from?
They just got in touch. And honestly, I was a tweet. It was in my old Twitter.
Uh-huh. Tell you what, after this episode, we'll all get one, I hope.
I've been trying to get this black card, no word of a lie, for about 15 years, and I've been rejected. And now they've finally come to their senses.
That must be the podcast.
You watch over the next 6 months, you're just going to see them explode, get bigger and bigger every single week.
Brilliant. From Nazrul, what's the strangest halftime team talk you've ever experienced?
What a great question that is.
I had one with Peter Shreves, the then Tottenham manager. He was quietly spoken, Peter. He's a really good coach. And he had a slightly high-pitched Cockney accent, really, even though I think he was Welsh, Peter Shreves. And we were playing Wimbledon away, and I think we were bloody awful in the first half. I think we were 3 or 4 down at half-time. We walked around, and I thought, fine, he's definitely going to have to give everyone a bollocking for this. Everyone was sitting down waiting for his words, and he just went, "Well, boys, we don't appear to be all singing from the same song sheet." And that was it. So I thought that was quite...
What happened in the second half?
We were shit.
Obviously, I've told the story about when I kicked the food and it went all over the dressing room. But
was it a Nando's?
No, it wasn't Nando's. Oh, I wouldn't have kicked that. But... While Mancini was basically, it was away, European game. I've told him this story before. But do you remember when we seen Platy at the at Wembley for the England game versus Brazil?
Yeah.
And Platy goes to me, do you remember effing and jeffing me that day? So as I've sort of basically kicked all the food, Platy's come over to me, and he's the assistant manager at that time. And he was going, he goes to me, "Oh, you've had the best game of your life. I don't even know what the manager is talking about." And I'm like, to play, fuck off. You just basically no, we need to get Platy on this for him to tell the story, because it was just, the manager's absolutely hammered me, and Platy has tried to get me back on side.
Yeah.
So he said, basically, I've had the best game ever. And that just made me more raging. We'll have to get him on.
Yeah, that's a good shout. What better time to have halftime when we're talking about halftime team talks? I think we probably need one while we're gone. We'll be back soon.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. I was traveling internationally last year. I was in Mallorca. I didn't know the island well. I said, let me head to the north, head towards the water. Let me go on hotels.com and see what they have available. Something preferably on the beach, maybe even a gym. Not only did I get those things, there was a kids session with exercise, gymnastics in the water, pony rides, a train. It had everything, and I didn't even want any of those things. But at least I knew they were there, just in case I changed my mind. And now finding the perfect hotel has never been easier thanks to the Hotels.com app. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly, right, all-inclusive, or a relaxing spa weekend, you can find exactly what you need and compare hotel prices, ratings, and amenities side by side. So start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app.
The Jeep Grand Cherokee 4xe plug-in hybrid is built for the best of both worlds. For the city buzz, for the call of the wild, for finding solitude, for sharing memories, for day trips, and for far-roaming adventures. Because with gas and electric capability, the Jeep Grand Cherokee 4xe inspires you to explore more, to explore it all. Tap the banner to learn more. Jeep is a registered trademark of FCA US LLC.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Welcome back to the Rest Is Football question and answer episode with Alan Shearer, Micah Richards and me, Gary Lineker. We'll bat straight on because there's so many good questions this week. Ethan, why doesn't the idea of scrapping VAR seem to be taken seriously? Surely getting rid of something that actively makes a spectator sport worse while not doing what it was introduced to do in the first place properly should at least be a realistic option. Is it pride on the part of those in charge that they don't want to admit it's not fit for purpose, or a sunk cost fallacy that means we're stuck with it?
We're stuck with it. They've invested too much into it. I mean, I know it hasn't worked anywhere near as well as it should have, or it hasn't been used like it was told to us that right at the very beginning, in terms of re-refereeing, in terms of clear and obvious. But I mean, the lawmakers, seriously, that's half the problem, is the lawmakers. They make it so complicated. It's hard enough anyway for referees, but they make it so complicated for them and ridiculously hard at times with the mad, crazy, over-the-top laws that should be so simplistic.
Handball being one of them, obviously.
Handball being one of them, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I think the same. I think we're stuck with it. They've invested not just in people and time, but also a lot of money's gone into it, you know, the setups of everywhere and stuff like that. I think it is a question, really, of getting the best out of a bad lot. I agree with you, Alan, about a lot of the law changes and the complicated nature of them now, and trying to work out a situation for every given incident is absurd. So they need to simplify that. You know, I've said many times on here and elsewhere that I think we should go to an appeal system to at least limit the invasion of our game as much as we possibly can. But it's hard to know, because these things are not in our control. And the control of our game now is basically in the hands of referees, because they're the ones that are coming up with the laws of the game now, not only officiating them, which is, I think, is also a shame for referees as well.
But are we a part to blame in that?
Not at all, Mike. We're not the slightest bit to blame.
Because we've been talking about it, you know, before, and Alan's exactly right when he said it's different to how we were told it was going to be used. So we understand that part. But we wanted it, didn't we? We wanted it. So is there any point turning our back on it right now? Surely it can only get better. It can't get worse, can it? But I agree with the actual question. I don't like VAR anymore. I was the one who campaigned for it. I think it was a mistake, but I don't think it's right to turn our back right now.
Well, I think we all thought it would be something that it's not, but I don't see how it's possible for it to be perfect. It can't be, because ultimately it still comes down to human beings, and human beings make mistakes. There are sides of it, obviously, technology wise goal line technology, and I think the offside thing will eventually be here, that it'll be automatic, which is not necessarily a bad thing, because it should be quick. But it can't be perfect. It's impossible to be perfect. And that's what we wanted. And we'll never know what the high bar, then there's a low bar, then there's a high bar again, and all this sort of stuff.
The last thing I'll say on this is that, go back, what was it, 4 years or whatever, how long of it was when it came out? And I always go back to this point. We wanted it in the format that they said. The format that they said and told us was that you were not, in capital letters, not going to re-referee the games, where blatantly that's happening every single game now, and it's only for the clear and obvious, which is clearly not the case. They are re-refereeing, and the decisions that they're making and overturning are not clear and obvious. That's what they told us, and it's not happening.
Yeah, I agree, but I think defining what clear and obvious is, it will vary between different people, and therein
lies. They used the Thierry Henry thing as an example, didn't they? The handball Thierry Henry, which was...
Well, handball Diego Maradona. Obviously, those things would be spotted immediately, and in that sense, you can certainly argue, well, the game is fairer because of those incidents, but it's the ones... Where does clear and obvious stop and start? That's the problem. And that's the problem that will always exist, in my opinion. So anyway, we just tend to spend a lot of our lives these days talking about VAR. Colin Edmondson, a question from Australia.
Good day, mate.
For all three of us. Just finished watching highlights of the Wolves versus West Ham game and wanted to ask what your thoughts are about penalties being taken like the Paquetá one this weekend. Should the officials begin cancelling the penalty if players do these stupid stop-start runs prior to taking the kick?
What is the actual rule on that?
There used to be a rule where you weren't allowed to do that.
Yes.
But you can now. You can now.
Yeah, where you can't. I think you're not allowed to stop with the way it still have to be in motion. Yeah, that was a rule as I remember it.
Not the kind of motion I had on the pitch, but anyway.
I don't see the issue with it. It's you've got the advantage. You've been given the penalty for a reason. So until you've actually touched that ball, what does it matter? I mean, the goalkeeper's allowed to bounce along the line like a raving lunatic, yet a player is not or wasn't allowed to sort of stop, start, whatever. I don't see the issue in it, mate. It's your penalty. You do what you want with it until you touch that ball. That's it.
Yeah, but I think on that, Al, they've already made it harder for goalkeepers where they've got to have at least 1 foot on the line.
Harder for goalkeepers? How's it harder for goalkeepers?
They've basically got to stay until the ball's being hit. So if you've got the technique of a Gary Lineker or Alan Shearer, it's like, I think it, what is the percentage? Like 75% of scoring a penalty. With that, with a keeper, that has got to made it even. It must have took it up to 85% for the strikers as well. So I get your point from a striker's point of view, but it is making it harder for the goalkeepers, them having to stay on the line.
Well, if they didn't have to stay on the line, they could just run right to the penalty spot, couldn't they?
Well, do you remember Dudek in the Champions League final?
Yeah.
Do you see where he was?
Yeah.
That was ridiculous.
Indeed. Andy asks, loving the podcast, my question is, as the Euros are coming up in the summer, would each of you answer who will win the tournament? Who will be top scorer of the tournament and who will be player of the tournament? I'll tell you what, we'll answer the last two when the tournament is about to start. We'll say reserve ourselves for that. But at the moment, we will answer who we think will win the tournament.
England, Harry Kane, Jude Bellingham.
Oh, hey! He's going to answer all three. I'll take that. I think he's asking who will win the tournament rather than we want to happen. But actually, I think I fancy England this time.
Never have a better chance.
No. You always get stick whenever you tip England. But I've not tipped them for an awfully long time. And I think for couple of decades we weren't that competitive, but I think with this young lot, as we've shown in the last three tournaments, we've not won one, but they've been very competitive and they'll go close. Who do you think will win the tournament? I think France are probably the other favourites. I think there's not much between them.
Yeah, I think so. England, France, Portugal. What about Germany? If they get on a bit of a roll, home team, I mean, they're not fancied and not the most spectacular team, but home advantage, all of that, and couple of young players coming through.
Yeah, Florian Wirtz.
I'm going France. I think you're right in terms of individuals. Are we the best team yet? I'm not sure. Maybe very close, but I think France just, yeah, I think something with Kylian and Giroud and Griezmann.
Giroud's like 37.
The way they play, it's just perfect for that allows Mbappe to do what he needs to do, and Griezmann as well. And Saliba can't even get into the team. That's how much cover they've got.
No, that's just a mistake. That's a mistake if they leave him out. Sean, one for Gary and Al. I'm not sure why he doesn't think this applies to you, Micah. What did you guys do with your hat-trick match balls? And are there any special ones you still have today? I used to have a few lying around. I was, funny enough, I was looking for them the other day just because I like to reminisce about my hat tricks. That's a joke, by the way. I didn't really do that. Have you got a few lying around in there, Alan?
It's actually, that's really weird. They've asked that question. 9th of April, 1988. Back in the day, today, this day in 1988, I made my debut as a 17-year-old and scored a hat-trick. And that question wasn't planned. How spooky is that?
Do you celebrate this day every year, Alan? Is that is that how you know? Is it like your birthday?
This was a special day, the 9th of April.
That is an amazing debut, though.
I still got that ball.
How old was you then?
17.
I bet you never thought then, when you won that match ball, that eventually you would look like the match ball.
I love it. Yeah. I've got all of my hat-trick balls.
Mine are somewhere. They're definitely around.
Do you mean somewhere? I do not know where they are. Well, like what, hidden in the loft somewhere or something like that, are they?
I think I know where they are. Okay. They're kind of hidden in a loft. And, right. And there's a few bags of England caps and stuff like that. I really
get
should
get them out.
I got my golden boots out, Micah.
But I mean, we need to, you know, we bring our stuff out and give a bit of insight into what we've got.
As you're on the 18th fairway, is it not about time you got them out and started to look to sell them?
Well, the boys, I think the boys have got their eyes on them. My lads. Cheeky bastard.
The 18th fairway?
I tell you what, this leads me on nicely to another question from Nathaniel that does apply to Micah. Is it true Micah won Player of the Month, and why hasn't he got the award on display? Did you win it?
Of course I won it. Of course I won it. I think it was it in 2007?
Is that not that Barclays thing behind you over your right shoulder, is it?
No, I've got many of them. That was just player of the match. It's, you know.
Well, so right. Okay. Have you still got your player of the month trophy?
You know what? I think I have somewhere, but I got burgled when I was in Manchester and I lost a lot of my stuff. So yeah, I'll try and find it, but I don't know where everything is, to be honest.
Producer Harry has just showed me a note. Oh. How about this, Big Meeks? You're going to like this.
Go on.
Micah Richards has won a player of the month trophy. Kevin De Bruyne never has.
That's what I mean. People need to put some respect on my name, Big Meeks.
Kevin De Bruyne has never won
That's
a player.
That's mad, isn't it?
Really?
Wow. Yeah.
That is scandalous, isn't it?
There's a question here from Paul Smith, which I have to read out for obvious reasons. Question for Gary. Does he have a comedy genius writer for his social media posts? Or are they all his own work?
No, but please, can you explain to the people? You've got a problem, haven't you?
Yeah, I can't. Yeah, dad
what,
jokes.
Just one?
No, but that's very kind of you, Paul. I don't have a comedy genius writer. I have a really shit one. But no, it's all my own work. So I'm to blame for all my cheesy, crappy puns, but I can't help it. One more question. Actually, quite a serious one from Jerome. Guys, could you please speak of the toll that a professional football career has on one's family, relationship, kids, etc.? I think probably post-football it's more difficult. I think during it, I mean, it's a wonderful life, isn't it? Yes, you travel a little bit, but you do spend an awful lot of time at home as well, because it's not like you work 40, 50 hours a week. Obviously, you're very well recompensed and you travel everywhere with luxury. I think the difficulty is at the end of football for a lot of players, you know, the fame gradually goes away, the salary disappears because there are not that many great jobs for footballers and outside of coaching. Some people invest what they've got in business, they might lose it, etc. There's only so many jobs in TV. I think the divorce rate for footballers between 35 and 40 years old is some ridiculous figure, like 70-odd%. So, you know, however much you earn, once professional football stops, it's a difficult thing to replace in your life and can have a varying effects on different individuals.
I think certainly travelling wise, I mean, probably don't travel off as much as the cricketers or the golfers.
No,
or
what exactly.
You do. I know you might be away every other week or whatever it is, but when you look at the cricketers, the amount of time that they spend away at a time, like 2 and 3 months at a time, the top cricketers, certainly not as bad as that, no.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough, isn't it? Because no matter what we say or, you know, I think people want to know sort of insight. It's difficult when you've got kids and you are traveling. There's this sort of feeling, because I've got a 7-year-old son now, and I miss birthdays. I miss not Christmas now, which Christmas is good, and it's just that feeling of being present for me that I find the toughest, because a lot of the work is in London for me, and then I'm traveling and I'm going to Match of the Day or Sky or whatever, and it's just missing the vital years is what I need to work on. And I've talked about this a little bit before. I think it's always tough. I was listening to a podcast with Wes Brown on the other day, and he was talking about he went bankrupt. And it's tough, isn't it? Because people always ask that question. How can you earn millions and go bankrupt? And obviously, you guys, I don't know what it's like for you guys, but when you have a lot of money so young, you have people around you who, they want the best for you, but they want the best for themselves as well. So every inch they're taking, you trust, and you trust this person to give money to, and then by the end of it, there's nothing left. And people ask, well, how can that happen? It's just because when you're a footballer, you're relying and concentrating on the football side of things. And, you know, like yourself, the pundits and presenters are saying, why are they concentrating on things outside football? Concentrate on your football. You do, and you still get stung anyway. So it is difficult, but I mean, it's not difficult in reality to what other people
exactly
are going through. And I think that is the point of it. And I've always been a happy person. Anywhere from Chapel Town, where I'd slept in the bedroom with two of my brothers. My older brother used to come from Birmingham at the time, but it doesn't matter. Money doesn't change me. I'm just happy regardless.
That's a lovely way to finish, Micah. Beautifully put. And Alan and myself now are going to spend the next few days watching golf and football. And it doesn't get much better than that.
Hear, hear.
So goodbye from me.
Goodbye from me.
Goodbye from me.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. When I went on my last holiday to Cape Town, it was amazing. My friends were there, the weather was phenomenal, and most importantly, the food was fantastic. But one thing I struggled with was finding the right places to stay. You know, all I want is a great bed, a fantastic shower, and breakfast that doesn't end at 8 a.m. I'm on holiday, I'm still sleeping. I also like ease, and the Hotels.com app easily helps me to find a perfect hotel for every trip. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly getaway or a relaxing spa weekend, on the Hotels.com app, you can compare up to 5 hotels side by side. Now, why would you want to do that? So you can see prices, amenities, and star ratings. And best of all, you don't have to switch back and forth between options. See? Ease. So, start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app today.
I'm Anthony Scaramucci, former White House Director of Communications and Wall Street financier.
And I'm Katty Kay, U.S. Special Correspondent for BBC Studios. I've been covering American politics for almost 3 decades.
Welcome to The Rest is Politics U.S., brought to you by Goalhanger.
Go on, tell us, were those donations you made, like Obama in 2008, was that idealism? Were you hoping to get something out of these campaigns that would serve your own business interests, for example?
So I think this will either make this podcast incredibly successful, Katty, or people will be horrified and they'll shut it off right now, because I'm going to be very real with you. The Obama donation, I had gone to law school with President Obama. We were not classmates. I was a few years ahead of him. It was 2007. He was then Senator Obama. I had a check in my breast pocket. I went over to the senator. I said, Senator, I said, you and I didn't really know each other in law school, but I'm about to hand you a big check. Can I lie to my friends and tell them that you and I knew each other in law school? Well, Obama looks at me, had the best smile in American politics since Jack Kennedy.
Forever.
Yeah. He lights up. He looks at me and says, I'll tell you what, if you double the amount of the check, we'll take it back to Hawaii. Okay. And I looked at him. I said, you're done. I had another check in my pocket. I ripped it up. I doubled the amount of the check. And I'm going to tell you right now, I've been to more White House Christmas parties during the Obama administration than the Trump administration.
In this pivotal year for the United States, democracy, and world affairs, Britain's biggest podcast, The Rest is Politics, is launching stateside.
Uncovering secrets from inside the Biden and Trump inner circles and how they shape the world's most important economy, but also the global economy too.
New episodes are released every Friday morning.
Just search The Rest is Politics US wherever you get your podcasts.